This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
Downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 24, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yeah, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. This one is, this one's a classic. This is a movie, extremely low budget, independent film, came out in the tail end of the 80s, caused a huge furor when it came out. It's still extremely, extremely unsettling today. It's one of the better examples of the genre. Henry is ostensibly the tale of serial killer Henry Lee Lucas, but that's like saying the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a faithful biopic of Ed Gein. I mean, basically what they did with TCM is they took some of the Ed Gein elements and they,
created a narrative around it.
Exactly. Sure. And so, I mean, the same with this. I mean, they were inspired by Henry Lee Lucas, but this particular Henry, played by Michael Rooker, this is not Henry Lee Lucas. He's Henry Lee Lucas-esque, yes. But he's not Henry Lee Lucas. Now, you know a bit about Lucas, so tell us a bit about Lucas.
Yeah, I guess the film kept the backstory correct, and Henry Lee Lucas was born to a prostitute who perversely made her young son watch as she serviced Johns. So this obviously had an indelible impact on young Henry. He killed so many people. This is the first instance I've ever heard of this. Mm-hmm. He went on a confession spree.
Exactly. He purportedly killed so many people because...
Yeah, well, we can take him for his word. Right. He definitely pegged, I would say, a good dozen murders on this guy, but he confessed to hundreds. And he would confess in exchange for, I guess, jailhouse perks. Mm. But his killing spree went on in Texas, and... Given that the filmmaker John McNaughton's hometown is Chicago, and given that, well, Chicago, it's the Windy City, it's a great friggin' place to film a movie, they uprooted the story of Henry, and they just set it in Chicago.
Right.
So what we got here is the character of Henry, played by Michael Rooker. Sinister Michael Rooker, best known for The Walking Dead.
Right.
I guess for the our younger listeners, we're not... as a point of interest, fans of the series.
Not at all.
to us, it's the Talking Dead.
Right.
We're Romero, dyed-in-the-wool zombie fans.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
us, it's just too much yakety-yak.
Exactly. Like, we're children of Romero and Fulci. We don't want to see yakety-yak. We want to see munchity-munch and that sort of thing. Gut chomping. I mean, there's a lot of fans of Walking Dead. But you know what, man? It just doesn't do it for me. But I digress.
That's why horror is so great.
Yeah, I mean, so Michael. I mean, yeah. I guess Michael Rooker would be best known for playing one of the Dixon brothers on Walking Dead. He plays Merle Dixon, and he was also in Guardians of the Galaxy, which was one of the biggest hits of the last year. He also was in Cliffhanger, the Sylvester Stallone classic. But this was his debut film. This was Michael Rooker's first movie, and the thing about this movie, one of the things that makes it so bloody effective is it's so un-Hollywood, it's so unglamorous. It's the antithesis of Hollywood glamour. I mean, this film, it's ugly. I mean, when I say ugly, I mean it's ugly in subject matter, it's ugly in the way it looks, it's ugly in the, don't get me wrong, there's tons of talent behind the camera, but it's an ugly movie, and when I say it's ugly, it's like... It's so... Everybody just looks non-Hollywood. They look real. They're not glamorous. It's ugly.
I guess it's hard to replicate, like, the talented Mr. Ripley with $100,000 in your in the till for mm-hmm. for your budget. But yeah, they definitely recreate the seediness of Chicago pre grooming slash hipster gentrification.
Yeah,
I really caught that here.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, there are scenes that take place in on the mean streets of Chicago in the late 80s, which I guess nowadays you would find your typical mommy bloggers and yoga studios and artisanal tea shops and so on and so forth. No, I mean, the thing about this movie, I mean, it's shitty. Everything is shitty. I mean, people, you know, Henry looks shitty.
Everyone is shitty. There's no one really who's got any sort of moral compass.
No.
And the person who's, I guess, least shitty is still the one who's enabling bad behavior. Mm-hmm, that would be the girlfriend, Becky.
That would be Becky, yeah. And we'll talk about her in a moment or two.
She's still an accessory to murder for the most part.
To a certain extent, yeah. I mean, by knowing about it and not calling the cops, I mean, although she doesn't really get her hands dirty. But, I mean, you know, you have this guy, Henry, and he is, I mean, look, the guy, he lives in a shitty part of town. He's got a shitty job.
He's a pest control agent,
a la Homer from The Nest. He lives in a shitty apartment. He's an ex-con, and he's got a shitty roommate.
Yeah.
Otis.
We've all been there. Well, for the latter anyway, not for everything else. I've been there for everything else.
Yeah, you're an ex-con, Chris?
His dysfunctional roommate. That's a pretty incredible performance as well.
Yeah, that's Tom Tolles. Tom Tolles is incredible. We'll get to that in a moment or two, but I mean, let's talk about the way the movie begins.
Mm.
It begins with...
Yeah, this is sine qua non for most horror films, from the 80s especially, is you just detail some psychopath who just runs through a bunch of victims and just kills them off in quick succession with mm-hmm. frequently no backstory or one that's just shoehorned in, and then that's basically the whole movie. This one dispenses with that, turns it on its ear,
right.
And basically shows off the victims mm-hmm. of Henry. During the opening credits, and then it fills in the backstory of the week in the life of a serial killer. So it totally turns things on its head.
Mm-hmm. So when the film begins...
A girl running for her life,
When the film begins, I mean, there's a scene of a woman who's naked and murdered. I believe her throat was slit, and I believe that was a faithful recreation of one of Henry Lucas's kills.
Lucas's victims, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think she was named.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't identify her. All she was a victim wearing nothing but orange socks, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so director John McNaughton just sort of restaged this her corpse just slightly. But mm-hmm. again, that sort of speaks to the bleakness right off the bat.
Yeah, and
handiwork, and then that's it.
Yeah, and I mean, from there, it's like it's one corpse, and then another corpse, and another corpse, and another corpse. And I mean, John McNaughton likened it to a tableau. I mean, you know, he was saying, like, you know, this is Henry's handiwork. If Henry's an artist, if he was a Rembrandt or a Hieronymus Bosch or what have you, we would be showing you his greatest piece of work. Well, this is Henry's work. This is what he does, right? In addition to being a pest control agent.
Yeah.
But anyhow, but what's really funny is that in the midst of showing all these corpses and all, and you know, and the things, we don't see the act. I mean, we just see the we see post priori. We see, you know, I mean, we see this one woman sitting on a toilet with a coke ball jammed in her eye.
Yeah.
You know, we know that somebody is doing something, and then we're at a diner and we see this gentleman, and I'm saying that in the strict sense of the word, because he's having a cup of coffee, paying for the cup of coffee,
and could not be more
charming. The waitress calling her sweetheart, saying what a nice smile she has, you know, giving her a nice little tip, and then boom, the next scene, we see two more victims of Henry.
Yeah, so, in a liquor store, and just, you know, glass strewn about. There's two victims, one of whom is lying face down on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
So we get the dichotomy of Henry.
Yeah.
He lives by his own sort of weird moral code.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is a dichotomy of Henry, because, I mean, there's something, I'm not going to say that he's, you know, endearing or lovable, but there's something sympathetic about the guy. There is, he's not fully 100% evil or reprehensible. There is a certain something about him that is charming, and that comes into play when we meet Becky. So let's talk a bit about that.
So
yeah, Becky is Otis's sister who comes in. I forget where, but she's clearly from the sticks, coming into the big city looking for work.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a bit down on her luck as well. She's
fleeing an abusive relationship. Yeah.
She's just trying to pick up whatever sort of sundry, blue collar work she can find. So she comes to Chicago.
Right.
And I guess she just finds work in a hair salon.
Well, no, I mean she's coming to Chicago because her brother Otis, right, is living in Chicago, and she's fleeing an abusive relationship, and her husband Leroy, and when Otis, who by the way is no Brad Pitt himself, when he sees her, one of the first things he says is, "You look terrible," you know, and you know what, she does look terrible. I mean, not even by Hollywood standards. She's just not a glamorous-looking girl. The actress herself, attractive lady, but in the movie, completely de-glamorized. And we see her brother picking her up. Now, this is Otis, okay? This is Henry's roommate. Henry and Otis, I mean, they have a bit of a backstory that gets sort of filled in as the film progresses. Henry, they were cellmates, right, Chris?
They met each other in the joint, so they didn't find each other through the usual channels that roommates do. I don't know, through Craigslist or word of mouth or something. But
The funny thing about Craigslist, I got to tell you, man. I mean, like, I think you would have a better chance of finding a better roommate in the joint than you would on Craigslist. I mean, you and I, we love to watch Judge Judy, right?
Yeah.
And every time we're seeing a roommate, it's like, oh, where did you find the roommate? Craigslist. You know. Craigslist is a den of iniquity, man. So I mean, I think. So yeah, but anyway, they meet up in the joint, and Otis is a scumbag. Let's put it that way. Henry may be a killer, but Otis is a sick fuck. Played incredibly by Tom Tolles, with this incredible set of chompers.
He's just sort of he's another uneducated, sort of credulous imbecile who's just drifting through life with no steady work. I think he's got some part-time, he's under the employ of some, a gas station.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm.
And that speaks to their, I guess, their being sympathetic characters. As you mentioned earlier, they're sort of down on their luck. Neither of these guys is particularly bright. And that stands in direct contrast to what we normally associate with serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are supposed to be cool, calculating. They have an IQ higher than average.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name in Florida who was a
Ted Bundy?
No, he was a law student. Forget his name, but Ted Bundy.
Yeah, I just said Ted Bundy.
It's become a cliche.
Yeah.
Him versus or a Hannibal Cannibal, to pick a modern exemplar. Yeah, they're cold, calculating, sinister types, and you figure that they could, if they had a different moral compass, put their intelligence to better use than what they do. But here, these guys are just complete losers.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this movie goes into the backstory of Henry Lee Lucas, and that's how actually Becky, Otis's sister, bonds with Henry.
Right. Well,
from abusive relationships.
Mm-hmm.
She is leaving her small town in hopes of a better life, leaving an abusive father / husband as well. And Henry, of course, his mother was a prostitute, whom he killed as well. And again, speaking to his victim count,
uh-huh.
This guy, the real Henry, has killed so many people he can no longer really remember them.
Mm-hmm.
In the film, they draw attention to this, where Henry is telling Becky as they're bonding about how he killed his mother, and he can't remember whether he shot her or stabbed her.
His story keeps changing, and that's the thing too. I mean, there's not a lot of ambiguity in Henry, but I mean, the one thing that is sort of ambiguous is, did he really kill his mother? Because I mean, it's funny because when Otis picks up Becky, and he's treating her like crap. I mean, and one thing he mentions, I have this roommate Henry, and he killed his mother, but don't mention that, right? And amazingly enough, I mean, when Henry first walks into the apartment and he meets Becky, again, he cannot be more polite. I mean, he gives up his room, he lets her sleep in the bed, and all Otis can do is order her around and say, "Get me a beer." I mean, that's basically the sum total of his dialogue with Becky, is get your brother a beer, But,
stabbing my mother to death isn't something that would come up in polite conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually something Becky draws out of him, interestingly.
Yeah, I mean, despite being warned against asking Henry about his whether or not he committed matricide or not, she does. And she and as Henry is discussing it, I mean, his story does change. And the funny thing is that as he's recounting this story of killing his mother, and my mother was a whore, and yeah, I stabbed her, oh, no, yeah, I shot her, etc., you see Becky, and she's falling for Henry. I mean, there's some, you know, I mean, and why is she falling for Henry? Well, I mean, you get the sense that this is a woman that's been treated like crap her entire life. I mean, she's been treated by crap not only by life, but by the people in her life. Her ex-husband, Leroy, her brother, Otis, and all of a sudden there's this guy, Henry, and despite the fact that he is a killer, he's treating her better than anybody else that has ever treated her. So, I mean, right away, the dichotomy, the relationship is warped, right?
Yeah.
And you get a sense that Becky is somewhat attracted to dangerous men. But, you know, I gotta say, man, like, I mean, this movie's called Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. Henry is the protagonist, and yet, in many ways, he's a lot more sympathetic than Otis. I mean, Henry is a killer. Otis is a sick fuck. I mean, he idolizes Henry. He basically does whatever Henry wants him to do. He worships Henry. But, I mean, you know, Henry's got whatever warped moral compass he has, he's got something. Otis is just, like, this fucking rabid puppy let loose. You know what I mean?
And yeah, at least Henry has the benefit of a terrible upbringing. Not to say that Otis's was that much better, but at least, you could say that, I guess, Becky was the target of parental abuse in that household. So Otis is the ultimate follower. He just follows Henry along, and later, I guess, he implores him that he wants to learn the ways of killing as well, and they take on a sort of weird protege,
mentor-protege relationship. Yeah, well, I mean, okay, well, you're mentioning Otis's upbringing. I mean, the guy had to have endured some ribbing because of those teeth. I mean, there's no way he could have escaped, you know?
not to mention later on in life with that awful comb-over and that giant gut.
Yeah.
So clearly he's not the most lovable guy by anyone.
Now, the thing is, so we're mentioning about, like, I mean, okay, so, this film is dark. I mean, the subject matter is dark, but it's not without its humor. I mean, the fact is, the humor is there. It's of your gallows variety. It's extremely black humor, but it's funny. So, I mean, there's one point where Becky, I guess they enjoyed a dinner together, you know, a nice sit-down, whatever, you know, piece of shit dinner they were eating on their meager allowances, you know, and Becky says, yeah, why don't you guys grab a beer? And Otis says, yeah, okay, well, you know, I guess I'll get into my my finery. And he comes in wearing this the most ridiculous shirt I've ever seen. I mean, this is like, you know, circa, like, 1970s.
54, it's the totally, yeah, it was blindingly purple.
Exactly. And him and Henry go out, and they pick up a couple of
ladies of
the evening, and they're in Henry's car, and Henry's shitty car, by the way, and all of a sudden Henry just snaps one of their necks, and the look on Otis's face is pure hilarity. I mean, I guess at that point he never really saw Henry commit a murder, and at this point he did, and now he's like, okay, well, you know what, I want to do this too.
Yeah, and that's Henry snapped, and that's when he snaps too. So after snap next, he goes from accomplice to perp.
Right, exactly.
That's exactly when he takes him under his wing as sort of a weird sort of protege. Mm-hmm. And again, getting back to the lighthearted moments, there's a scene when Otis, in a fit of rage, because obviously he's got impulse control.
Exactly.
He destroys his television.
Yeah. He doesn't pull an Elvis. He doesn't shoot the TV. He kicks the TV. Yep. And, so they go out shopping. They go TV shopping. And, you know, this is 1986, 87, what have you. I don't know if there was a Best Buy in their little seat part of Chicago. So instead they go to this weird-ass garage. And there's this guy who, sitting, this horribly obese guy.
His stock in trade is obviously like a combination of new and used electronics.
Right.
Physicality, I guess you could best compare him to. With his girth, and he's sort of a combination of the killer from Human Centipede 2, the comic book guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was going to say, like, in terms of his appearance and his demeanor, I mean, he basically is the live-action version of comic book guy. And, I mean, all he's doing...
He's a big slob, and he definitely doesn't follow the tenet that the customer is always right. So these two schlubos are trying to find what's the best available technology to them in 1987. This is rude to them. It's just rude.
Oh, he's totally rude. I mean, he's totally condescending. I mean, and the funny thing is, I mean, back then, I mean, there wasn't, you know, your LED versus your plasma versus your, you know, there was no HD. It was basically black and white versus color, right? And, you know, the guy is just being a complete shit. And we know at this point, we know what Henry's capable of. We know what Otis is capable of. And we're like, okay, dude, you should not be, you know, messing with these two people.
Off to these two sociopaths.
And they end up offing him in one of the most ridiculous ways possible. Again, this is just a little bit of humor in the movie. I mean,
like a literal representation of how television kills brain cells.
Right.
They stab him a few times, but
with a soldering iron.
They take a television and just plop it right over his head.
And then, what does Henry say to Otis? Yeah. Plug it in, right?
Yeah.
And they electrocute the guy. But I mean.
Still there.
But the thing is, I mean, the levity in that scene, and again, when I say levity, I mean, it's not, you know, your standard, you know, Two and a Half Men or whatever. I mean, this is like dark humor. Not that Two and a Half Men is funny. I mean, that's probably a lot more offensive than this movie, in my opinion. But, you know, they end up taking their TV, and they also take a camcorder. And, you know, that's contrasted with their next scene where they're basically
That incorporates some even more cinema verite into this, because unlike the found footage genre, this is actually these guys making snuff films, and it makes it for a much more harrowing immediate experience than you can see in the typical we're a bit sullied on the found footage genre. But these guys, I guess once Otis develops a taste for killing, they take their show on the road, and camera in tow, they start to detail their killings,
right?
And they go after a poor couple.
Yeah, again, we don't see them stalking the couple. We don't see them casing. Nope. All we see is they're inside a house, and Henry's holding the camera. I mean, his handiwork's already been done because the husband is on the floor, and
he's been tied up. He's got a bag over his head,
bloody, and Otis is basically having his way with the lady of the house, and you know, he's molesting her, and in doing so, he also snaps her neck. And after snapping her neck, he actually kisses her, and then he wants to go further. And Henry goes,
"Let's go further." And then that's where we get into the weird moral compass,
because Henry goes, "Otis, no, stop!" Right? And this is where we start.
The real Henry Lee Lucas, who was a necrophiliac, as we mentioned earlier, he actually tells him to stop. So I guess we get this one little vestige of humanity, if you can call it that, in Henry. So at least he knows where to draw the line. I don't know.
But I mean, the thing is, like, the analogy I want to make is, I mean, like, Otis at this point, he's just this fucking mutt who's just, like, you know, doing anything and everything. I mean, he's got no impulse control whatsoever. Whereas Henry, he's like this sleek Rottweiler. I mean, you know, he's a killer, but he knows what to do. He knows who to kill, who not to kill. There's that scene when Otis, I mean, we should say he also deals a little bit of drugs on the side, and he's selling some weed to some high school kid, and then he
tries to make some advances on this male high school kid, and he's rebuffed.
Right.
And he just flies into a fit of rage, saying, I want to kill that guy, and, you know, I want to just lop his head off and whatnot. And Henry knows better of it. It's like he handpicks his victims for the most part based on their ability to be not caught.
Mm-hmm.
So he favors, obviously, the ladies of the evening, but...
Well, not the ladies. I mean, it's funny because in the beginning of the movie, I mean, we see him... There's this one scene where he's in a shopping mall plaza, and he sees a woman enter a car, and he follows her home. And, you know, we know what his intent is. He wants to kill her, but then he sees her with her husband. He says he thinks better of it, you know? But, you know what? I mean, again, like, what's really amazing about this movie is that a lot of it is, like, we know what's going to happen. We don't need to see what's going to happen. So instead of killing her, we see him pick up a hitchhiker. That's it. We don't see anything. We know she's going to come to a bad end. Another point, he knocks on a door with his insecticide, right?
Yeah,
we don't see the aftermath, but we know that she's going to come to a bad end. On the other hand, the sick fuck Otis. I mean, what's really amazing is when they're, you know, as we said, when they're recording this. And then as after Otis, snaps the neck of the woman, the son comes home, and Henry has to throw down the camera, and then he throws, what a terrible time to come home, he dispatches his son, and then the camera pulls back. When I say the camera, I'm not referring to the camcorder, I'm referring to the actual, the camera,
camera work, yeah.
Exactly, and we realize that this is being watched. This is not happening as it was happening. This is being viewed,
priori,
by the film, by us, but also by Henry and Otis. And in a sense, it's almost implicating the viewer into what...
We're complicit in this.
Yeah, exactly.
And that theme is revisited later when Otis, as he begins to develop a taste for blood, he starts to watch his own... He's an auteur. He's a snuff film director. So he starts to just become obsessed with the films he's made, and he starts watching them. And
yeah, but it's funny because as they're watching a movie, he goes, he rewinds it, and Henry goes, why? And he goes, I want to see it again. And he watches it again in slow-mo. Once again, Otis is a sick fuck. And, once again, I'm talking about Henry and his sort of odd sense of morality. And we're talking with Becky, Becky the sister. Earlier on in the movie, when Becky goes to bring Otis a beer, he grabs her really forcefully and he tries to plant a kiss on her.
Kiss on her, yeah.
And Henry grabs Otis and says, stop it, that's your sister, don't do that. Show her some respect, you know what I mean? So, it's very bizarre as to, who he respects and who he deems worthy of killing, who he deems worthy of living. But, the other thing that's quite interesting about this film is that there is no moralizing, there's no justification. We don't know why. There's this sort of backstory about whatever, but there's not much in the way of this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. At one point, he just says to Otis, open your eyes, Otis, look at the world. It's either you or them.
Or them.
And that's what he feels in order to survive in this world, he needs to do what he's doing. And the other, I gotta say, this is part of the gallows humor of the movie. But after the home invasion scene, we then see our trio, this being Otis, Becky, and Henry, whooping it up and dancing to a song by the Sonics, a great garage band from the '60s called Psycho.
Yeah,
great song. So very appropriate.
Yeah, this film is not as violent as others of its ilk. Mm-hmm. It's a character study.
It is a character study. I would go so far as to say this is not a horror film. This is a horrific movie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, in fact, to quote, from the book The Horror Show Guide, The Ultimate Fright Fest of Movies, Mike Mayo describes it thusly. Mm-hmm. He says, the film was rated X for violence and subject matter, but has been released on tape and DVD without a rating. It is definitely not for kids, and older audiences looking for titillating violence or elaborate effects will be disappointed. In terms of on-screen acts of violence, Henry contains only a tiny fraction of the average Friday the 13th flick. But this is a real nightmare. Yeah, that's exactly bang on. Mm-hmm. So you get a glimpse inside the psyche of these two monsters in a way that you don't with the average masked killer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting. Again, cinema verite, these guys are filming themselves.
Right.
These guys are living mundane lives between.
And these are real people. These are human beings. There's nothing more supernatural about this. There's no, it's not this undead zombie, Jason after the umpteen sequel. Don't get me wrong, I love those, but there's something more scary when the horror comes from within. When it's just a human being like you or I, you know what I mean? And we don't know.
Yeah. The famous Hannah Arendt phrase, the banality of evil.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
exactly what this is. And it seems like Otis, in the bulk of his dialogue, is just his desire to grab a beer.
Yeah, exactly.
Something we're familiar with.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is definitely one to check out. It's one of the greats in the pantheon of horror. We can't recommend it highly enough.
Oh yeah, and before, we gotta say, no discussion of Henry would be complete without discussing
Michael Rooker.
Well, no, but not even Michael Rooker. But I want to talk about two more things. I want to talk about the sound design first of all, because that is a character in itself. The actual there's this sort of very plaintive piano. melody, and then all of a sudden you hear these like these really
superimposed. You got the screams and the weird noises.
Ambient
like
screams.
The early advent of sampling technology. Mm-hmm. This was the era of Run DMC and the emergence of rap. So they actually use a keyboard and samples. So you have this weird subliminal, like, you know, weird screeching and screaming.
Well, there's subliminal, and then there's also, I mean, is this such a word as liminal? Because, I mean, at one point over the soundtrack here, die bitch, right? The other thing that's incredible about this movie, and you know, I think to myself, like, yeah, I mean, this movie does, I mean, in a sense, like, it is akin to Texas Chainsaw, where, you know, they could go so much further, but they don't, and yet it's so unsettling. And I think to myself, why is it so unsettling? Well, you know, you have these two guys in an urban environment, right? And they're just going around, and they're killing tons and tons of people. Now, in a lesser movie, there would be some sort of subplot of, like, you know, investigators, you know, finding all these corpses and trying to figure out, you know, who's doing it and piecing together forensic evidence.
Yeah, Chicago's finest, but really absent here.
No, in fact, there's no law enforcement anywhere. There's not one policeman seen in the entire movie. In fact, you know, there's nothing. There's no tracking down the killer. There's no, you know, who's doing this. There's one scene where they're, and this had to be intentionally ironic by the director, where they're speeding down the freeway and they're either going from a killing or to a killing, I can't remember, and you see the squad car just speed right by, as if the filmmaker's saying, you know what, you want your little sense of safety, you want your sense of, you know, law and order, there you go. They don't give a shit, you know what I mean? And these guys are going to continue on the rampage, and that's the end of that. So, Michael Rooker, yeah, I mean, as we said before.
Yeah, you had the pleasure of meeting him.
I did. I mean, like, this is Michael, like I said, this was Michael Rooker's first movie, and I mean, he's gone on to become a very, very prolific character actor in Hollywood. And if you don't know the guy's name, you know his face. I mean, he's been in so many things. Now, I did meet Michael Rooker a couple years ago. Every year we have this thing in Toronto called Fan Expo. And Fan Expo is a sort of convention of all sorts of different things, comics, sci-fi, and horror. And a couple years ago, Michael Rooker was going to be there. And I go every year, and I usually go for the entire weekend. And I really wanted to get Michael Rooker to autograph my Henry Blu-ray. So this thing goes on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I went on Thursday, and I'm looking around. I'm like, where's Michael Rooker? Oh, he's not here today. He couldn't make it. He missed his flight. Ah, shit, right? So I figured I'll get him tomorrow. Friday, where's Michael Rooker? Oh, you know what? He'll be here tomorrow, right? So finally Saturday comes around, and Rooker's there, you know, and there's Henry. Henry himself. And, you know, I mean, I gotta stand in line, get this guy's autograph. And I'm staying in line, there's gotta be about 300, 400 people. And I'm the only person with any sort of Henry memorabilia. Everybody else is a fucking deadhead. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Walking Dead. Like, oh my god, I'm gonna meet Merle Dixon. I mean, this guy's the brother of Daryl Dixon. Norman Reedus, he's the most handsome man in the world, and he's on the other table. Fuck this. And I'm like, standing there going, has anybody even seen this movie? Has anybody even heard of this movie? No. This is Merle Dixon. I'm like, this is not Merle. This is fucking Henry. So I'm waiting in the lineup, and I get to the front, and I put my Blu-ray on the table, and Rooker looks at it and looks at me, and he's like, oh yeah, man, Henry, awesome, right? And he signs it, and then he picks up this 8x10 that he has in front of him of him with Otis. It's a very disgusting, I don't want to spoil like the denouement of the film, but it's a very disgusting scene, right? And he's like, hey everybody, look at this, this is my best friend, look what I did to this guy, oh man, this guy's awesome, dude, oh Henry, awesome. And he signs the 8x10 and he gives it to me, right? And right away I'm like, oh my god, Henry, this is awesome. And I go, Michael, could we get a picture together, right? And his publicist goes, No, he doesn't. And Michael goes, ah, shut up, come here, man. And he reaches out and he grabs my neck really, really forcefully, pulls me into him. I grab my camera, I take this this selfie, and fucking incredible. You know what I mean? He was this close to snapping my neck, but you know what? It was well worth it.
That's fantastic. You could have been a victim of Henry yourself. That's really cool.
Yep.
This is definitely one of our favorites, and everyone who's got any interest in the psychological elements of horror just has to watch this. Anyway, for more, check out our site, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Take care.